"What was that about?" Doxson asked.
"We had a bet," Breeze said, "regarding whether or not Kelsier was involved in last night's disturbance."
"Disturbance?" Yeadon asked. "What disturbance?"
"Someone attacked House Venture," Ham said. "The rumors claim that 3 full Mistborn were sent to assassinate Straff Venture himself."
Kelsier snorted. 3? Straff certainly has an elevated opinion of himself. I didn't go anywhere near his lordship. I was there for the Atium, and to make certain that I was seen."
"Venture isn't sure who to blame," Breeze said. "But because Mistborn were involved, everyone assumes that it was one of the great houses."
"That was the idea," Kelsier said happily. "The high nobility take Mistborn attacks very seriously. They have an unspoken agreement that they won't use Mistborn to assassinate each other. A few more strikes like this, and I'll have them snapping at each other like frightened animals." He turned, adding, "Breeze, planning, and Kelsier, general mayhem, beneath great houses on the board." "Anyway," Kelsier continued, "we'll need to keep an eye on local politics to find out which houses are making alliances. That means sending a spy to some of their functions."
"Is that really necessary?" Yeadon asked uncomfortably.
Ham nodded.
"It's standard procedure for any Luthadel job, actually. If there is information to be had, it will pass through the lips of the court's powerful. It always pays to keep an open set of ears moving through their circles."
"Well, that should be easy," Breeze said. "We just bring up your impostor and send him into the parties."
Kelsier shook his head. "Unfortunately, Lord Renew himself won't be able to come to Luthadel." Yeadon frowned.
"Why not? Won't your impostor hold up to close scrutiny?"
"Oh, he looks just like Lord Renew," Kelsier said.
"Exactly like Lord Renew, actually. We just can't let him get near an Inquisitor."
"Ah," Breeze said, exchanging a glance with Ham. "One of those. Well, then."
"What?" Yeadon asked. "What does he mean?"
"You don't want to know," Breeze said.
"I don't?"
Breeze shook his head.
"You know how unsettled you just were when Kelsier said he'd replaced Lord Renew with an impostor? Well, this is about a dozen times worse. Trust me, the less you know, the more comfortable you'll be."
Yeadon looked toward Kelsier, who was smiling broadly. Yeadon paled, then leaned back in his chair.
"I think you're probably right."
Vin frowned, eyeing the others in the room. They seemed to know what Kelsier was talking about. She'd have to study this Lord Renew sometime.
"Anyway," Kelsier said, "we have to send someone to the social functions. Dox, therefore, will be playing Renew's nephew and heir, a scion of the family who has recently gained favor with Lord Renew."
"Wait a moment, Kel," Doxson said. "You didn't tell me about this."
Kelsier shrugged.
"We're going to need someone to be our dupe with the nobility. I assumed that you'd fit the role."
"Can't be me," Doxson said. "I got marked during the ICER job just a couple months back."
"Do I want to know what they're talking about this time?"
"He means that the Ministry is watching for him," Breeze said. "He pretended to be a nobleman, and they found out."
Doxson nodded.
"The Lord Ruler himself saw me on one occasion, and he's got a flawless memory. Even if I manage to avoid him, someone's bound to recognize me eventually."
"So," Yeadon said.
"So," Kelsier said, "we'll need someone else to play Lord Renew's heir."
"Don't look at me,"
Yeadon said apprehensively. "Trust me," Kelsier said flatly. "Nobody has. Clubs is out, too. He's far too prominent a local Scar craftsman."
"I'm out as well," Breeze said. "I already have several aliases among the nobility. I suppose I could use one of them, but I couldn't go to any major balls or parties. It would be rather embarrassing if I met someone who knew me by a different alias."
Kelsier frowned thoughtfully.
"I could do it," Ham said. "But you know I'm no good at acting."
"What about my nephew?"
Clubb said, nodding to the young man at his side. Kelsier studied the boy. What's your name, son?
Nestor Bones.
Kelsier raised an eyebrow.
That's a mouthful. You don't have a nickname?
Not of the yetting yet.
We'll have to work on that, Kelsier said. Do you always speak in that eastern street slang?
The boy shrugged, obviously nervous at being such a center of attention.
Was in the place when I was young.
Kelsier glanced at Doxson, who shook his head.
I don't think it's a good idea, Kel.
Agreed.
Kelsier turned to Vin, then smiled.
I guess that leaves you. How good are you at imitating a noblewoman?
Vin paled slightly.
My brother gave me a few lessons, but I've never actually tried to.
You'll do fine, Kelsier said, writing Vin, Infiltration, under Great Houses.
All right.
Yin, you should probably begin planning how you're to keep control of the Empire once this is all through.
Yin nodded. Vin felt a little sorry for the man, seeing how much the planning, the sheer outrageousness of it all, seemed to be overwhelming him. Still, it was hard to feel sympathy for him, considering what Kelsier had just said regarding her part in all this.
Playing a noblewoman, she thought. Surely there's someone else who could do a better job.
Breeze's attention was still on Yidden and his obvious discomfort.
Don't look so solemn, my dear fellow, Breeze said. Why, you'll probably never actually have to rule the city. Chances are we'll all get caught and executed long before that happens.
Yidden smiled wanly.
And if we don't? What's to keep you all from just knifing me and taking the Empire for yourselves?
Breeze rolled his eyes.
We're thieves, my dear man, not politicians. A nation is far too unwieldy a commodity to be worth our time. Once we have our atium, we'll be happy.
Not to mention rich, Ham added.
The two words are synonyms, Hammond, Breeze said.
Besides, Kelsier said to Yidden, we won't be giving you the entire empire. Hopefully it will shatter once Luthadel destabilizes. You'll have this city and probably a good piece of the central dominance, assuming you can bribe the local armies into supporting you.
And the Lord Ruler?
Yidden asked. Kelsier smiled.
I'm still planning to deal with him personally. I just have to figure out how to make the 11th metal work.
And if you don't?
Well, Kelsier said, writing Yidden, Preparation and Rule beneath Ska Rebellion on the board.
We'll try and find a way to trick him out of the city. Perhaps we can get him to go with his army to the pits and secure things there.
Then what?
Yidden asked.
You find some way to deal with him, Kelsier said. You didn't hire us to kill the Lord Ruler, Yidden. That's just a possible perk I intend to throw in if I can.
I wouldn't worry too much, Yidden, Ham added. He won't be able to do much without funds or armies. He's a powerful allomancer, but by no means omnipotent.
Breeze smiled.
Though, if you think about it, hostile, dethroned pseudo-deities probably make disagreeable neighbors. You'll have to figure out something to do with him.
Yidden didn't appear to like that idea much, but he didn't continue the argument. Kelsier turned.
That should be it, then.
Ham said. What about the Ministry? Shouldn't we at least find a way to keep an eye on those Inquisitors?
Kelsier smiled.
We'll let my brother deal with them.
Like hell you will, a new voice said from the back of the room.
Vin jumped to her feet, spinning and glancing toward the room's shadowed doorway. A man stood there. Tall and broad-shouldered, he had a statuesque rigidity. He wore modest clothing, a simple shirt and trousers with a loose ska jacket. His arms were folded in dissatisfaction, and he had a hard, square face that looked a bit familiar. Vin glanced back at Kelsier. The similarity was obvious.
Marsh?
Eden said, standing.
Marsh, it is you. He promised you'd be joining the job, but I... Well, welcome back.
Marsh's face remained impassive.
I'm not certain if I'm back or not, Eden. If you all don't mind, I'd like to speak privately with my little brother.
Kelsier didn't seem intimidated by Marsh's harsh tone. He nodded to the group.
We're done for the evening, folks.
The others rose slowly, giving Marsh a wide berth as they left. Vin followed them, pulling the door shut and walking down the stairs to give the appearance of retiring to her room. Less than 3 minutes later, she was back at the door, listening carefully to the conversation going on inside.
Rashik is a tall man. Of course, most of these terrace men are tall. He is young to receive so much respect from the other packmen. He has charisma, and the women of court would probably describe him as handsome in a rugged sort of way. Yet it amazes me that anyone would give heed to a man who speaks such hatred. He has never seen Helenium, yet he curses the city. He does not know me, yet I can already see the anger and hostility in his eyes.
7. 3 years hadn't changed Marsh's appearance much. He was still the stern, commanding person Kelsier had known since childhood. There was still that glint of disappointment in his eyes, and he spoke with the same air of disapproval. Yet if Doxen were to be believed, Marsh's attitudes had changed much since that day 3 years before. Kelsier still found it hard to believe that his brother had given up leadership of the Ska Rebellion. He had always been so passionate about his work. Apparently, that passion had dimmed. Marsh walked forward, regarding the charcoal writing board with a critical eye. His clothing was stained slightly by dark ash, though his face was relatively clean for a ska. He stood for a moment, looking over Kelsier's notes. Finally, Marsh turned and tossed a sheet of paper onto the chair beside Kelsier.
"What is this?" Kelsier asked, picking it up.
"The names of the 11 men you slaughtered last night," Marsh said. "I thought you might at least want to know."
Kelsier tossed the paper into the crackling hearth.
"They served the Final Empire." "They were men, Kelsier," Marsh snapped. "They had lives, families. Several of them were Ska. Traitors." "People," Marsh said. "People who were just trying to do the best with what life gave them."
"Well, I'm just doing the same thing," Kelsier said. "Unfortunately, life gave me the ability to push men like them off the tops of buildings. If they want to stand against me like noblemen, then they can die like noblemen."
Marsh's expression darkened.
"How can you be so flippant about something like this?"
"Because, Marsh," Kelsier said, "humor is the only thing I've got left. Humor and determination."
Marsh snorted quietly.
"You should be happy," Kelsier said. "After decades of listening to your lectures, I finally decided to do something worthwhile with my talents. Now that you're here to help, I'm sure..."
"I'm not here to help," Marsh interrupted.
"Then why did you come?"
"To ask you a question."
Marsh stepped forward, stopping right in front of Kelsier.
They were about the same height, but Marsh's stern personality always made him seem to loom taller.
"How dare you do this?" Marsh asked quietly. "I dedicated my life to overthrowing the Final Empire. While you and your thieving friends partied, I hid runaways. While you planned petty burglaries, I organized raids. While you lived in luxury, I watched people die of starvation."
Marsh reached up, stabbing a finger at Kelsier's chest.
"How dare you? How dare you try and hijack the rebellion for one of your little jobs? How dare you use this dream as a way of enriching yourself?"
Kelsier pushed Marsh's finger away.
"That's not what this is about."
"Oh?"
Marsh asked, tapping the word Atium on the board.
"Why the games, Kelsier? Why lead Yidden along, pretending to accept him as your employer? Why act like you care about the scar? We both know what you're really after.
Kelsier clenched his jaw, a bit of his humor melting away.
He could always do that to me. You don't know me anymore, Marsh, Kelsier said quietly. This isn't about money. I once had more wealth than any man could spend. This job is about something different.
Marsh stood close, studying Kelsier's eyes as if searching for truth in them.
You always were a good liar, he finally said.
Kelsier rolled his eyes.
Fine, think what you want. But don't preach to me. Overthrowing the Empire might have been your dream once, but now you've become a good little scar, standing in your shop and fawning over noblemen when they visit.
I faced reality, Marsh said. Something you've never been good at. Even if you're serious about this plan, you'll fail. Everything the Rebellion has done, the raids, the thefts, the deaths, has accomplished nothing. Our best efforts were never even a mild annoyance for the Lord Ruler.
Ah, Kelsier said. But being an annoyance is something that I am very good at. In fact, I'm far more than just a mild annoyance. People tell me I can be downright frustrating. Might as well use this talent for the cause of good, eh?
Marsh sighed, turning away. This isn't about a cause, Kelsier. It's about revenge. It's about you, just like everything always is. I'll believe that you aren't after the money. I'll even believe that you intend to deliver Yeadon this army he's apparently paying you for. But I won't believe that you care.
That's where you're wrong, Marsh, Kelsier said quietly. That's where you've always been wrong about me.
Marsh frowned. Perhaps. How did this start, anyway? Did Yeadon come to you, or did you go to him?
Does it matter? Kelsier asked.
Look, Marsh, I need someone to infiltrate the Ministry. This plan won't go anywhere if we don't discover a way to keep an eye on those Inquisitors.
Marsh turned.
You actually expect me to help you?
Kelsier nodded.
That's why you came here, no matter what you say. You once told me that you thought I could do great things if I ever applied myself to a worthy goal. Well, that's what I'm doing now, and you're going to help.
It's not that easy anymore, Kel, Marsh said with a shake of his head. Some people are different now. Others are gone.
Kelsier let the room grow quiet. Even the hearth's fire was starting to die out.
I miss her too.
I'm sure that you do. But I have to be honest with you, Kel. Despite what she did, sometimes I wish that you hadn't been the one to survive the pits.
I wish the same thing every day.
Marsh turned, studying Kelsier with his cold, discerning eyes. The eyes of a seeker. Whatever he saw reflected inside of Kelsier must have finally met with his approval.
I'm leaving, Marsh said. But for some reason you actually seem sincere this time. I'll come back and listen to whatever insane plan you've concocted. Then, well, we'll see.
Kelsier smiled. Beneath it all, Marsh was a good man, a better one than Kelsier had ever been. As Marsh turned toward the door, Kelsier caught a flicker of shadowed movement from beneath the doorway. He immediately burned iron, and the translucent blue lines shot out from his body, connecting him to nearby sources of metal. Marsh, of course, had none on his person, not even any coins. Traveling through ska sectors of town could be very dangerous for a man who looked even marginally prosperous. Someone else, however, hadn't yet learned not to carry metal on her person. The blue lines were thin and weak. They didn't do well penetrating wood. But they were just strong enough to let Kelsier locate the belt latch of a person out in the hallway, moving quickly away from the door on silent feet. Kelsier smiled to himself. The girl was remarkably skilled. Her time on the streets, however, had also left her with remarkable scars. Hopefully he would be able to encourage the skills while helping heal the scars.
"I'll return tomorrow," Marsh said as he reached the door.
"Just don't come too early," Kelsier said with a wink. "I've got some things to do tonight."
Vin waited quietly in her darkened room, listening to footsteps clump down the stairs to the ground floor. She crouched beside her door, trying to determine if both sets had continued down the steps or not. The hallway fell silent, and eventually she breathed a quiet sigh of relief. A knock sounded on the door just inches from her head. Her start of surprise nearly knocked her to the ground.
"He's good," she thought.
She quickly ruffled her hair and rubbed her eyes, trying to make it appear as if she had been sleeping. She untucked her shirt and waited until the knock came again before pulling open the door. Kelsier lounged against the doorframe, backlit by the hallway's single lantern. The tall man raised an eyebrow at her disheveled state.
"Yes?" Vin asked, trying to sound drowsy.
"So, what do you think of Marsh?"
"I don't know," Vin said. "I didn't see much of him before he kicked us out."
Kelsier smiled.
"You're not going to admit that I caught you, are you?"
Vin almost smiled back. Reen's training came to her rescue. "The man who wants you to trust him is the one you must fear the most." Her brother's voice almost seemed to whisper in her head. It had grown stronger since she had met Kelsier, as if her instincts were on edge. Kelsier studied her for a moment, then stepped back from the doorframe.
"Tuck in that shirt and follow me."
Vin frowned.
"Where are we going?"
"To begin your training."
"Now?"
Vin asked, glancing at the dark shutters to her room.
"Of course," Kelsier said. "It's a perfect night for a stroll."
Vin straightened her clothing, joining him in the hallway. If he actually planned to begin teaching her, then she wasn't going to complain, no matter what the hour. They walked down the steps to the first floor. The workroom was dark, furniture projects lying half-finished in the shadows. The kitchen, however, was bright with light.
"Just a minute," Kelsier said, walking toward the kitchen.
Vin paused just inside the shadows of the workroom, letting Kelsier enter the kitchen without her. She could just barely see inside. Doxson, Breeze, and Ham sat with Clubs and his apprentices around a wide table. Wine and ale were present, though in small amounts, and the men were munching on a simple evening snack of puffed barley cakes and battered vegetables. Laughter trickled out into the workroom. Not raucous laughter, such as had often sounded from Cayman's table. This was something softer, something indicative of genuine mirth, of good-natured enjoyment. Vin wasn't certain what kept her out of the room. She hesitated, as if the light and the humor were a barrier, and she instead remained in the quiet, solemn workroom. She watched from the darkness, however, and wasn't completely able to suppress her longing. Kelsier returned a moment later, carrying his pack and a small cloth bundle. Vin regarded the bundle with curiosity, and he handed it to her with a smile.
"A present."
The cloth was slick and soft in Vin's fingers, and she quickly realized what it was. She let the gray material unroll in her fingers, revealing a mistborn cloak. Like the garment Kelsier had worn the night before, it was tailored completely from separate, ribbon-like strips of cloth.
"You look surprised," Kelsier noted.
"I assumed that I'd have to earn this somehow."
"What's there to earn?" Kelsier said, pulling out his own cloak. "This is who you are, Vin."
She paused, then threw the cloak over her shoulders and tied it on.
It felt different.
Thick and heavy on her shoulders, but light and unconstraining around her arms and legs. The ribbons were sewn together at the top, allowing her to pull it tight by the mantle if she wished. She felt enveloped, protected.
"How does it feel?" Kelsier asked.
"Good,"
Vin said simply. Kelsier nodded, pulling out several glass vials. He handed two to her.
"Drink one. Keep the other in case you need it. I'll show you how to mix new vials later." Finn nodded, downing the first vial and tucking the second into her belt.
"I'm having some new clothing tailored for you," Kelsier said. "You'll want to get into the habit of wearing things that don't have any metal on them. Belts with no buckles, shoes that slip on and off, trousers without clasps. Perhaps later, if you're feeling daring, we'll get you some women's clothing."
Vin flushed slightly. Kelsier laughed.
"I'm just teasing you. However, you're entering a new world now. You may find there are situations where it will be to your advantage to look less like a crew thief and more like a young lady."
Ben nodded, following Kelsier as he walked to the shop's front door. He pushed the portal open, revealing a wall of darkly shifting mists. He stepped out into them. Taking a deep breath, Vin followed. Kelsier shut the door behind them. The cobbled street felt muffled to Vin, the shifting mists making everything just a bit damp. She couldn't see far in either direction, and the street ends seemed to fade into nothingness, paths into eternity. Above, there was no sky, just swirling currents of gray upon gray.
"All right, let's begin," Kelsier said.
His voice felt loud in the quiet, empty street. There was a confidence to his tone, something that, confronted with the mists all around, Vin certainly didn't feel.
"Your first lesson," Kelsier said, strolling down the street, Vin trailing along beside him, "isn't about allomancy, but attitude."
He swept his hand forward.
"This, Vin, this is ours. The night, the mists, they belong to us. Ska avoid the mists as if they were death. Thieves and soldiers go out at night, but they fear it nonetheless. Noblemen feign nonchalance, but the mist makes them uncomfortable."
He turned, regarding her.
"The mists are your friend, Vin. They hide you, they protect you, and they give you power. Ministry doctrine, something rarely shared with Ska, claims that the Mistborn are descendants of the only men who remained true to the Lord Ruler during the days before his ascension. Other legends whisper that we are something beyond even the Lord Ruler's power, something that was born on that day when the mists first came upon the land."
Vin nodded slightly. It seemed odd to hear Kelsier speak so openly. Buildings filled with sleeping Ska loomed on either side of the street. And yet the dark shutters and quiet air made Vin feel as if she and Kelsier were alone. Alone in the most densely populated, overcrowded city in all of the Final Empire. Kelsier continued to walk, the spring in his step incongruent with the dark gloom.
"Shouldn't we be worried about soldiers?" Vin asked quietly.
Her crews always had to be careful of nighttime garrison patrols. Kelsier shook his head.
"Even if we were careless enough to be spotted, no Imperial patrol would dare bother Mistborn. They'd see our cloaks and pretend not to see us. Remember, nearly all Mistborn are members of the Great Houses, and the rest are from lesser Luthadel Houses. Either way, they're very important individuals."
Vin frowned.
"So, the guards just ignore the Mistborn?"
Kelsier shrugged.
"It's bad etiquette to acknowledge that the skulking rooftop figure you see is actually a very distinguished and proper High Lord, or even High Lady. Mistborn are so rare that houses can't afford to apply gender prejudices to them. Anyway, most Mistborn live two lives, the life of the court-going aristocrat, and the life of the sneaking, spying allomancer. Mistborn identities are closely guarded house secrets. Rumors regarding who is Mistborn are always a focus of high noble gossip."
Kelsier turned down another street, Vin following, still a bit nervous. She wasn't certain where he was taking her. It was easy to get lost in the night. Perhaps he didn't even have a destination and was just accustoming her to the mists.
"All right," Kelsier said. "Let's get you used to the basic metals. Can you feel your metal reserves?"
Vin paused. If she focused, she could distinguish eight sources of power within her, each one far larger even than her two had been on the day when Kelsier had tested her. She had been reticent to use her luck much since then. She was coming to realize that she had been using a weapon she'd never really understood, a weapon that had accidentally drawn the attention of a steel inquisitor. "Begin burning them one at a time," Kelsier said.
"Burning?"
"That's what we call it when you activate an allomantic ability," Kelsier said. "You burn the metal associated with that power. You'll see what I mean. Start with the metals you don't know about yet. We'll work on soothing and raging emotions some other time." Vin nodded, pausing in the middle of the street. Tentatively, she reached out to one of the new sources of power. One of them was slightly familiar to her. Had she used it before without realizing it? What would it do?
Only one way to find out.
Uncertain what exactly she was supposed to do, Vin gripped the source of power and tried to use it. Immediately she felt a flare of heat from within her chest. It wasn't discomforting, but it was obvious and distinct. Along with the warmth came something else, a feeling of rejuvenation and of power. She felt more solid somehow. "What happened?" Kelsier asked.
"I feel different," Vin said.
She held up her hand, and it seemed as if the limb reacted just a bit too quickly. The muscles were eager.
"My body is strange. I don't feel tired anymore, and I feel alert."
"Ah," Kelsier said. "That's pewter. It enhances your physical abilities, making you stronger, more able to resist fatigue and pain. You'll react more quickly when you're burning it, and your body will be tougher." Vin flexed experimentally. Her muscles didn't seem any bigger, yet she could feel their strength. It wasn't just in her muscles, however. It was everything about her. Her bones, her flesh, her skin. She reached out to her reserve and could feel it shrinking.
"I'm running out," she said.
Kelsier nodded. "Pewter burns relatively quickly. The vial I gave you was measured to contain about 10 minutes' worth of continuous burning, though it will go faster if you flare often and slower if you are careful about when you use it."
"Flare?"
"You can burn your metals a little more powerfully if you try," Kelsier said. "It makes them run out much faster, and it's difficult to maintain. But it can give you an extra boost." Vin frowned, trying to do as he said. With a push of effort, she was able to stoke the flames within her chest, flaring the pewter. It was like the inhaled breath before a daring leap, a sudden rush of strength and power. Her body grew tense with anticipation, and for just a moment she felt invincible. Then it passed, her body relaxing slowly.
"Interesting," she thought,
noting how quickly her pewter had burned during that brief moment. "Now there's something you need to know about allomantic metals," Kelsier said as they strolled forward in the mists. "The more pure they are, the more effective they are. The vials we prepare contain absolutely pure metals, prepared and sold specifically for allomancers. Alloys, like pewter, are even trickier, since the metal percentages have to be mixed just right, if you want maximum power. In fact, if you aren't careful when you buy your metals, you could end up with the wrong alloy entirely." Vin frowned.
"You mean someone might scam me?"
"Not intentionally," Kelsier said. "The thing is, most of the terms that people use, words like brass, pewter, and bronze, are really quite vague when you get down to it. Pewter, for instance, is generally accepted as an alloy of tin mixed with lead, with perhaps some copper or silver, depending on the use and the circumstances. Allomancer's pewter, however, is an alloy of 91% tin, 9% lead. If you want maximum strength from your metal, you have to use those percentages."
"And if you burn the wrong percentage?" Vin asked.
"If the mixture is only off by a bit, you'll still get some power out of it," Kelsier said. "However, if it's too far off, burning it will make you sick." Vin nodded slowly.
"I think I've burned this metal before. Once in a while, in very small amounts."
"Trace metals," Kelsier said. from drinking water contaminated by metals or by eating with pewter utensils. Vin nodded. Some of the mugs in Cayman's lair had been pewter. All right, Kelsier said. Extinguish the pewter and let's move on to another metal. Vin did as asked. The withdrawal of power left her feeling weak, tired, and exposed. Now, Kelsier said, you should be able to notice a kind of pairing between your reserves of metal.
Like the two emotion metals, Vin said.
Exactly. Find the metal linked to pewter.
I see it, Vin said.
There are two metals for every power, Kelsier said. One pushes, one pulls. The second is usually an alloy of the first. For emotions, the external mental powers, you pull with zinc and push with brass. You just used pewter to push your body. That's one of the internal physical powers.
Like Ham, Vin said. He burns pewter.
Kelsier nodded. Mistings who can burn pewter are called thugs. A crude term, I suppose, but they tend to be rather crude people. Our dear Hammond is something of an exception to that rule.
So what does the other internal physical metal do?
Try it and see. Vin did so eagerly, and the world suddenly became brighter around her. Or, well, that wasn't quite right. She could see better, and she could see farther. But the mists were still there. They were just more translucent. The ambient light around her seemed brighter somehow. There were other changes. She could feel her clothing. She realized that she had always been able to feel it, but she usually ignored it. Now, however, it felt closer. She could sense the textures, and was acutely aware of the places where the cloth was tight on her. She was hungry. That, too, she had been ignoring. Yet now her hunger seemed far more pressing. Her skin felt wetter, and she could smell the crisp air mixed with scents of dirt, soot, and refuse.
Tin enhances your senses, Kelsier said, his voice suddenly seeming quite loud. And it's one of the slowest burning metals. The tin in that vial is enough to keep you going for hours. Most Mistborn leave their tin on whenever they're out in the mists. I've had mine on since we left the shop.
Vin nodded. The wealth of sensations was nearly overwhelming. She could hear creaks and scuffles in the darkness, and they made her want to jump in alarm, certain that someone was sneaking up behind her.
This is going to take some getting used to.
Leave it burning, Kelsier said, waving for her to walk beside him as he continued down the street. You'll want to accustom yourself to the enhanced senses. Just don't flare it all the time. Not only would you run out of it very quickly, but perpetually flaring metals does strange things to people.
Strange? Vin asked.
Metals, especially tin and pewter, stretch your body. Flaring the metals only pushes this stretching further. Stretch it too far for too long and things start to break. Vin nodded uncomfortably. Kelsier fell quiet, and they continued to walk, letting Vin explore her new sensations and the detailed world that tin revealed. Before, her vision had been restricted to a tiny pocket within the night. Now, however, she saw an entire city enveloped by a blanket of shifting, swirling mist. She could make out keeps like small dark mountains in the distance, and could see specks of light from windows like pin-pricked holes in the night. And above, she saw lights in the sky. She stopped, gazing up in wonder. They were faint, blurred to even her tin-enhanced eyes, but she could just barely make them out. Hundreds of them. Thousands of them. So small, like the dying embers of candles recently extinguished.
Stars, Kelsier said, strolling up beside her.
You can't see them very often, even with tin. It must be a particularly clear night. People used to be able to look up and see them every night. That was before the mists came, before the ash mounts erupted ash and smoke into the sky. Vin glanced at him.
How do you know?
Kelsier smiled.
The Lord Ruler has tried very hard to crush memories of those days, but still some remain. He turned, not really having answered her question, and continued to walk. Vin joined him. Suddenly, with Tin, the mists around her didn't seem so ominous. She was beginning to see how Kelsier could walk about at night with such confidence. "All right," Kelsier eventually said. "Let's try another metal." Vin nodded, leaving her tin on but picking another metal to burn as well. When she did, a very strange thing happened. A multitude of faint blue lines sprung from her chest, streaking out into the spinning mists. She froze, gasping slightly and looking down at her chest. Most of the lines were thin, like translucent pieces of twine, though a couple were as thick as yarn. Kelsier chuckled. "Leave that metal and its partner alone for the moment. They're a bit more complicated than the others." "What?" Vin asked, tracing the lines of blue light with her eyes. They pointed at random objects. Doors, windows, a couple even pointed at Kelsier. "We'll get to it," he promised. "Extinguish that one and try one of the last two." Vin extinguished the strange metal and ignored its companion, picking one of the last metals. Immediately she felt a strange vibration. Vin paused. The pulses didn't make a sound that she could hear, yet she could feel them washing across her. They seemed to be coming from Kelsier. She looked at him, frowning. "That's probably bronze," Kelsier said. "The internal mental pulling metal. It lets you sense when someone is using allomancy nearby. Seekers, like my brother, use it. Generally, it's not that useful, unless you happen to be a steel inquisitor searching for ska mistings." Vin paled.
"Inquisitors can use allomancy?"
Kelsier nodded. "They're all seekers. I'm not sure if that's because seekers are chosen to become inquisitors, or if the process of becoming an inquisitor grants the power. Either way, since their main duties are to find half-breed children and noblemen who use allomancy improperly, it's a useful skill for them to have. Unfortunately, useful for them means rather annoying for us." Vin began to nod, then froze. The pulsing had stopped.
"What happened?" she asked.
"I started burning copper," Kelsier said. "The companion to bronze. When you burn copper, it hides your use of powers from other allomancers. You can try burning it now if you want, though you won't sense much." Vin did so. The only change was a feeling of slight vibration within her. "Copper is a vital metal to learn," Kelsier said. "It will hide you from inquisitors. We probably didn't have anything to worry about tonight. The inquisitors would assume us to be regular noble mistborn, out for training. However, if you're ever in a ska guise and need to burn metals, make sure you turn on your copper first." Vin nodded appreciatively. "In fact," Kelsier said, "many mistborn keep their copper on all the time. It burns slowly, and it makes you invisible to other allomancers. It hides you from bronze. And it also prevents others from manipulating your emotions." Vin perked up. "I thought that might interest you," Kelsier said. "Anyone burning copper is immune to emotional allomancy. In addition, copper's influence occurs in a bubble around you. This cloud, called a copper cloud, hides anyone inside of it from the senses of a seeker, though it won't make them immune to emotional allomancy like it will you."
"Clubs," Vin said. "That's what a smoker does."
Kelsier nodded. "If one of our people is noticed by a seeker, they can run back to the lair and disappear. They can also practice their abilities without fear of being discovered. Allomantic pulses coming from a shop in a ska sector of town would be a quick giveaway to a passing inquisitor."
"But you can burn copper," Vin said. "Why were you so worried about finding a smoker for the crew?"
"I can burn copper, true," Kelsier said. "And so can you. We can use all of the powers, but we can't be everywhere. A successful crew leader needs to know how to divide labor, especially on a job as big as this one.
Standard practice has a copper clad going at all times in the lair. Clubs doesn't do it all himself. Several of his apprentices are smokers, too. When you hire a man like Clubs, it's understood that he'll provide you with a base of operations and a team of smokers competent enough to keep you hidden at all times. Vin nodded. However, she was more interested in Copper's ability to protect her emotions. She would need to locate enough of it to keep it burning all the time. They started walking again, and Kelsier gave her more time to get used to burning tin. Vin's mind, however, began to wander. Something didn't feel right to her. Why was Kelsier telling her all of these things? It seemed like he was giving away his secrets too easily. Except one, she thought suspiciously. The metal with the blue lines. He hasn't gone back to it yet. Perhaps that was the thing he was going to keep from her, the power he would hold in reserve to maintain control over her. It must be strong, the most powerful of the eight. As they walked through the quiet streets, Vin reached tentatively inside. She eyed Kelsier, then carefully burned that unknown metal. Again, the lines sprang up around her, pointing in seemingly random directions. The lines moved with her. One end of each thread stayed stuck to her chest, while the other end remained attached to a given place along the street. New lines appeared as she walked, and old ones faded, disappearing behind. The lines came in various widths, and some of them were brighter than others. Curious, Vin tested the lines with her mind, trying to discover their secret. She was focused on a particularly small and innocent-looking one, and found that she could feel it individually if she concentrated. She almost felt like she could touch it. She reached out her hand and gave it a slight tug. The line shook, and something immediately flew out of the darkness toward her. Vin yelped, trying to jump away, but the object, a rusty nail, shot directly toward her. Suddenly, something grabbed the nail, ripping it away and throwing it back out into the darkness. Vin came up from her roll in a tense crouch, mist cloak fluttering around her. She scanned the darkness, then glanced at Kelsier, who was chuckling softly. "I should have known you'd try that," he said. Vin flushed in embarrassment. "Come on," he said, waving her over. "No harm done."
"The nail attacked me!"
"Did that metal bring objects to life? That would be an incredible power indeed."
"Actually, you kind of attacked yourself," Kelsier said.
Vin stood carefully, then joined him as he began to walk down the street again.
"I'll explain what you did in a moment," he promised. "First, there's something you have to understand about allomancy."
"Another rule?"
"More a philosophy," Kelsier said. "It has to do with consequences."
Vin frowned.
"What do you mean?"
"Every action we take has consequences, Vin," Kelsier said. "I've found that in both allomancy and life. The person who can best judge the consequences of their actions will be the most successful. Take burning pewter, for instance. What are its consequences?"
Vin shrugged.
"You get stronger."
"What happens if you're carrying something heavy when your pewter runs out?"
Vin paused.
"I suppose you'd drop it."
"And if it's too heavy, you could hurt yourself seriously. Many a missing thug has shrugged off a dire wound while fighting, only to die from that same wound, once their pewter ran out."
"I see," Vin said quietly.
"Ha!"
Vin jumped in shock, throwing her hands up over her enhanced ears.
"Ow!"
she complained, glaring at Kelsier. He smiled.
"Burning tin has consequences, too. If someone produces a sudden light or sound, you can be blinded or stunned."
"But what does that have to do with those last two metals?"
"Iron and steel give you the ability to manipulate other metals around you," Kelsier explained. "With iron, you can pull a metal source towards yourself. With steel, you can push one away." "Ah, here we are." Kelsier stopped, looking up ahead. Through the mist, Vin could see the massive city wall looming above them.
"What are we doing here?"
"We're going to practice iron pulling and steel pushing," Kelsier said.
But first, some basics. He pulled something out of his belt, a clip, the smallest denomination of coin. He held it up before her, standing to the side. Burn steel, the opposite of the metal you burned a few moments ago. Vin nodded. Again the blue lines sprang up around her. One of them pointed directly at the coin in Kelsier's hand. All right, Kelsier said. Push on it. Vin reached toward the proper thread and pushed slightly. The coin flipped out of Kelsier's fingers, traveling directly away from Vin. She continued to focus on it, pushing the coin through the air until it snapped against the wall of a nearby house. Vin was thrown violently backward in a sudden jerking motion. Kelsier caught her and kept her from falling to the ground. Vin stumbled and righted herself. Across the street, the coin, now released from her control, plinked to the ground. What happened? Kelsier asked her. She shook her head.
I don't know. I pushed on the coin and it flew away. But when it hit the wall, I was pushed away.
Why? Vin frowned thoughtfully.
I guess the coin couldn't go anywhere, so I had to be the one that moved.
Kelsier nodded approvingly. Consequences, Vin. You use your own weight when you steel push. If you're a lot heavier than your anchor, it will fly away from you like that coin did. However, if the object is heavier than you are, or if it runs into something, that is, you'll be pushed away. Iron pulling is similar. Either you'll be pulled toward the object, or it will be pulled toward you. If your weights are similar, then you'll both move. This is the great art of allomancy, Vin. Knowing how much or how little you will move when you burn steel or iron will give you a major advantage over your opponents. You'll find that these two are the most versatile and useful of your abilities. Vin nodded. Now remember, he continued, in both cases the force of your push or pull is directly away from or toward you. You can't flip things around with your mind, controlling them to go wherever you want. That's not the way that allomancy works, because that's not the way the physical world works. When you push against something, whether with allomancy or with your hands, it goes directly in the opposite direction. Force, reactions, consequences. Understand? Vin nodded again. Good, Kelsier said happily. Now, let's go jump over that wall.
What?
He left her standing dumbfounded in the street. She watched him approach the base of the wall, then scurried over to him.
You're insane, she said quietly.
Kelsier smiled. I think that's the second time today you've said that to me. You need to pay better attention. If you'd been listening to everyone else, you'd know that my sanity departed long ago.
Kelsier, she said, looking up at the wall. I can't. I mean, I've never really even used allomancy before this evening.
Yes, but you're such a quick learner, Kelsier said, pulling something out from beneath his cloak. It appeared to be a belt. Here, put this on. It's got metal weights strapped to it. If something goes wrong, I'll probably be able to catch you.
Probably?
Vin asked nervously, strapping on the belt. Kelsier smiled, then dropped a large metal ingot at his feet. Put the ingot directly below you, and remember to steel push, not iron pull. Don't stop pushing until you reach the top of the wall. Then he bent down and jumped. Kelsier shot into the air, his dark form vanishing into the curling mists. Vin waited for a moment, but he didn't plummet back down to his doom. All was still, even to her enhanced ears. The mists whirled playfully around her, taunting her, daring her. She glanced down at the ingot, burning steel. The blue line glowed with a faint, ghostly light. She stepped over to the ingot, standing with one foot on either side of it. She glanced up at the mists, then down one last time. Finally, she took a deep breath and pushed against the ingot with all of her strength.
He shall defend their ways, yet shall violate them. He will be their savior, yet they shall call him heretic. His name shall be Discord,
yet they shall love him for it. 8. Vin shot into the air. She suppressed a scream, remembering to continue pushing despite her fear. The stone wall was a blur of motion just a few feet away from her. The ground disappeared below, and the line of blue pointing toward the ingot grew fainter and fainter.
"What happens if it disappears?"
She began to slow. The fainter the line grew, the more her speed decreased. After just a few moments of flight, she crept to a halt, and was left hanging in the air above a nearly invisible blue line.
"I've always liked the view from up here."
Vin glanced to the side. Kelsier stood a short distance away. She had been so focused that she hadn't noticed that she was hovering just a few feet from the top of the wall.
"Help!"
she said, continuing to push desperately lest she fall. The mists below her shifted and spun, like some dark ocean of damned souls.
"You don't have to worry too much," Kelsier said. "It's easier to balance in the air if you have a tripod of anchors, but you can do fine with a single anchor. Your body is used to balancing itself. Part of what you've been doing since you learned to walk transfers to allomancy. As long as you stay still, hanging at the very edge of your pushing ability, you'll be pretty stable. Your mind and body will correct any slight deviations from the base center of your anchor below, keeping you from falling to the sides. If you were to push on something else, or move too much to one side, though, well, you'd lose your anchor below, and wouldn't be pushing directly up anymore. Then you'd have problems. You'd tip over like a lead weight on top of a very tall pole."
"Kelsier," Vin said.
"I hope you aren't afraid of heights, Vin," Kelsier said. "That's quite a disadvantage for a Mistborn."
"I'm not afraid of heights," Vin said through gritted teeth. "But I'm also not accustomed to hanging in the air 100 feet above the bloody street."
Kelsier chuckled, but Vin felt a force tug against her belt, pulling her through the air toward him. He grabbed her and pulled her up over the stone railing, then set her down beside him. He reached an arm over the side of the wall. A second later, the ingot shot up through the air, scraping along the side of the wall until it flipped into his waiting hand.
"Good job," he said. "Now we go back down."
He tossed the ingot over his shoulder, casting it into the dark mists on the other side of the wall.
"We're really going outside?" Vin asked. "Outside the city walls? At night?"
Kelsier smiled in that infuriating way of his. He walked over and climbed onto the battlements.
"Varying the strength with which you push or pull is difficult, but possible. It's better to just fall a bit, than push to slow yourself. Let go and fall some more, then push again. If you get the rhythm right, you'll reach the ground just fine."
"Kelsier,"
Vin said, approaching the wall,
"I don't..."
"You're at the top of the city wall now, Vin," he said, stepping out into the air. He hung, hovering, balanced as he'd explained to her before.
"There are only two ways down. Either you jump off, or you try and explain to that guard patrol why a Mistborn needs to use their stairwell."
Vin turned with concern, noting an approaching bob of lantern light in the dark mists. She turned back to Kelsier, but he was gone. She cursed, bending over the side of the wall and looking down into the mists. She could hear the guards behind her, speaking softly to one another, as they walked along the wall. Kelsier was right. She didn't have many options. Angry, she climbed up onto the battlement. She wasn't afraid of heights in particular, but who wouldn't be apprehensive standing atop the wall looking down at her doom? Vin's heart fluttered, her stomach twisting.
"I hope Kelsier's out of the way," she thought, checking the blue line to make certain she was above the ingot.
Then she stepped off. She immediately began to plummet toward the ground. She pushed reflexively with her steel, but her trajectory was off. She had fallen to the side of the ingot, not directly toward it. Consequently, her push nudged her to the side even farther, and she began to tumble through the air. Alarmed, she pushed again, harder this time, flaring her steel. The sudden effort launched her back upward. She arced sideways through the air, popping up into the air alongside the wall top. The passing guards spun with surprise, but their faces soon became indistinct, as Vin fell back down toward the ground. Mind muddled by terror, she reflexively reached out and pulled against the ingot, trying to yank herself toward it. And, of course, it obediently shot up toward her.
"I'm dead."
Then her body lurched, pulled upward by the belt. Her descent slowed until she was drifting quietly through the air. Kelsier appeared in the mists, standing on the ground beneath her. He was, of course, smiling. He let her drop the last few feet, catching her, then setting her upright on the soft earth. She stood quivering for a moment, breathing in terse, anxious breaths.
"Well, that was fun," Kelsier said lightly.
Vin didn't respond. Kelsier sat down on a nearby rock, obviously giving her time to gather her wits. Eventually, she burned pewter, using the sensation of solidness it provided, to steady her nerves.
"You did well," Kelsier said.
"I nearly died."
"Everybody does their first time," Kelsier said. "Iron pulling and steel pushing are dangerous skills. You can impale yourself with a bit of metal that you pull into your own body, you can jump and leave your anchor too far behind, or you can make a dozen other mistakes. My experience, limited though it is, has been that it's better to get into those extreme circumstances early, when someone can watch over you. Anyway, I assume you can understand why it's important for an Allomancer to carry as little metal on their body as possible." Vin nodded, then paused, reaching up to her ear.
"My earring," she said. "I'll have to stop wearing it."
"Does it have a clip on the back?" Kelsier asked. Vin shook her head.
"It's just a small stud, and the pin on the back bends down."
"Then you'll be all right," Kelsier said. "Metal in your body, even if only a bit of it is in your body, can't be pushed or pulled. Otherwise, another Allomancer could rip the metals out of your stomach while you were burning them."
"Good to know," Vin thought.
"It's also why those Inquisitors can walk around so confidently with a pair of steel spikes sticking out of their heads. The metal pierces their bodies, so it can't be affected by another Allomancer. Keep the earring. It's small, so you won't be able to do much with it, but you could use it as a weapon in an emergency."
"All right.
Now, you ready to go?" She looked up at the wall, preparing to jump again, then nodded. "We're not going back up," Kelsier said. "Come on." Vin frowned as Kelsier began to walk out into the mists.
"So he does have a destination after all, or has he just decided to wander some more?"
Oddly, his affable nonchalance made him very difficult to read. Vin hurried to keep up, not wanting to be left alone in the mists. The landscape around Luthadel was barren, save for scrub and weeds. Prickles and dried leaves, both dusted with ash from an earlier ashfall, rubbed against her legs as they walked. The underbrush crunched as they walked, quiet, and a bit sodden with mist dew. Occasionally they passed heaps of ash that had been carted out of the city. Most of the time, however, ash was thrown into the River Chanaril, which passed through the city. Water broke it down eventually, or at least that was what Vin assumed. Otherwise the entire continent would have been buried long ago. Vin stayed close to Kelsier as they walked. Though she had traveled outside cities before, she had always moved as part of a group of boatmen, the Ska workers who ran narrow boats and barges up and down the many canal routes in the Final Empire. It had been hard work. Most noblemen used Ska instead of horses to pull the boats along the towpath, but there had been a certain freedom to knowing that she was traveling at all. For most Ska, even Ska thieves, never left their plantation or town. The constant movement from city to city had been Reen's choice. He had been obsessive about never getting locked down. He usually got them places on canal boats run by underground crews, never staying in one place for more than a year. He had kept moving, always going, as if running from something. They continued to walk. At night, even the barren hills and scrub-covered plains took on a forbidding air. Vin didn't speak, though she tried to make as little noise as possible. She had heard tales of what went abroad in the land at night, and the cover of the mists, even pierced by tin as it now was, made her feel as if she were being watched. The sensation grew more unnerving as they traveled. Soon she began to hear noises in the darkness. They were muffled and faint, crackles of weeds, shuffles in the echoing mist. "You're just being paranoid," she told herself as she jumped at some half-imagined sound. Eventually, however, she could stand it no more.
"Kelsier,"
she said with an urgent whisper, one that sounded betrayingly loud to her enhanced ears.
"I think there's something out there."
"Hmm?" Kelsier asked. He looked lost in his thoughts.
"I think something is following us."
"Oh," Kelsier said. "Yes, you're right. It's a mist wraith." Vin stopped dead in her tracks. Kelsier, however, kept going.
"Kelsier,"
she said, causing him to pause.
"You mean they're real?"
"Of course they are," Kelsier said. "Where do you think all the stories came from?" Vin stood in dumbfounded shock. "You want to go look at it?" Kelsier asked.
"Look at the mist wraith?" Vin asked. "Are you—"
She stopped. Kelsier chuckled, strolling back to her. "Mist wraiths might be a bit disturbing to look at, but they're relatively harmless. They're scavengers, mostly. Come on." He began to retrace their footsteps, waving her to follow. Reluctant, but morbidly curious, Vin followed. Kelsier walked at a brisk pace, leading her to the top of a relatively scrub-free hill. He crouched down, motioning for Vin to do likewise. "Their hearing isn't very good," he said as she knelt in the rough ashen dirt beside him, "but their sense of smell, or rather taste, is quite acute. It's probably following our trail, hoping that we'll discard something edible." Vin squinted in the darkness.
"I can't see it,"
she said, searching the mists for a shadowed figure. "There," Kelsier said, pointing toward a squat hill. Vin frowned, imagining a creature crouching atop the hill, watching her as she looked for it. Then the hill moved. Vin jumped slightly. The dark mound, perhaps 10 feet tall and twice as long, lurched forward in a strange, shuffling gait, and Vin leaned forward, trying to get a better look. "Flare your tin," Kelsier suggested. Vin nodded, calling upon a burst of extra allomantic power. Everything immediately became lighter, the mists becoming even less of an obstruction. What she saw caused her to shiver, fascinated, revolted, and more than a little disturbed. The creature had smoky, translucent skin, and Vin could see its bones. It had dozens upon dozens of limbs, and each one looked as if it had come from a different animal. There were human hands, bovine hooves, canine haunches, and others she couldn't identify. The mismatched limbs let the creature walk, though it was more of a shamble. It crawled along slowly, moving like an awkward centipede. Many of the limbs, in fact, didn't even look functional. They jutted from the creature's flesh in a twisted, unnatural fashion. Its body was bulbous and elongated. It wasn't just a blob, though. There was a strange logic to its form. It had a distinct skeletal structure, and, squinting through tin-enhanced eyes, she thought she could make out translucent muscles and sinew wrapping the bones. The creature flexed odd jumbles of muscles as it moved, and appeared to have a dozen different rib cages. Along the main body, arms and legs hung at unnerving angles. And heads. She counted 6. Despite the translucent skin, she could make out a horse head sitting beside that of a deer. Another head turned toward her, and she could see its human skull. The head sat atop a long spinal cord attached to some kind of animal torso, which in turn attached to a jumble of strange bones. Vin nearly retched.
"What? How?"
"Mist wraiths have malleable bodies," Kelsier said. "They can shape their skin around any skeletal structure, and can even recreate muscles and organs if they have a model to mimic."
"You mean—"
Kelsier nodded. "When they find a corpse, they envelop it and slowly digest the muscles and organs. Then they use what they've eaten as a pattern, creating an exact duplicate of the dead creature. They rearrange the parts a little bit, excreting the bones they don't want, while adding the ones they do want to their body, forming a jumble like what you see out there. Vin watched the creature shamble across the field, following her tracks. A flap of slimy skin drooped from its underbelly, trailing along the ground.
Tasting for scents, Vin thought. Following the smell of our passing.
She let her tin return to normal, and the mist wraith once again became a shadowed mound. The silhouette, however, only seemed to heighten its abnormality.
Are they intelligent, then? Vin asked. If they can split up a body and put the pieces where they want?
Intelligent? Kelsier asked.
No, not one this young.
More instinctual than intelligent. Vin shivered again.
Do people know about these things? I mean, other than the legends.
What do you mean by people? Kelsier asked. A lot of Allomancers know about them, and I'm sure the Ministry does. Regular people? Well, they just don't go out at night. Most Ska fear and curse Mistwraiths, but go their entire lives without actually seeing one.
Lucky for them, Vin muttered.
Why doesn't someone do something about these things? Kelsier shrugged. They're not that dangerous.
That one has a human head.
It probably found a corpse, Kelsier said. I've never heard of a Mistwraith attacking a full-grown, healthy adult. That's probably why everyone leaves them alone. And, of course, the high nobility have devised their own uses for the creatures. Vin looked at him questioningly, but he said no more, rising and walking down the hillside. She shot one more glance at the unnatural creature, then took off, following Kelsier.
"Is that what you brought me out here to see?" Vin asked.
Kelsier chuckled. "Mistwraiths might look eerie, but they're hardly worth such a long trip." No, we're heading over there.